Welcome, welcome, welcome. The week has flown by and we are back sitting on the couch. That is me, Jason DeRosso, and Wenli Ma,
who's sitting opposite.
Hello, hello. We are ready once again to talk the small screen on ABC Radio National. And first things first, though, if you are listening to this show in your podcast feed, you may have noticed already that we are an extra 3 minutes duration this week. So we have only been on air a month, and already we've gotten 3 minutes extra from management, which is
a
very
promotion.
Nice. A promotion. At this rate, by the end of the year, we'll be a half-hour show.
Wow. And don't promise things you can't deliver.
And if we're still on air in 5 years, we could just be...
We could be the whole station.
Yeah, ABC Radio National becomes ABC The Couch. Who knows? But let's not fritter away these 3 minutes with this intro banter. Let's get into it. We're talking about two shows this week that star, I would say, much beloved veteran actors. I mean, one is an ensemble, so mm-hmm. it's not just about her. But the other one is a show that's very much a vehicle for a man by the name of Nick Cage.
We love Nick Cage.
Who hasn't done a lot of TV or any TV at this level,
no
really.
TV. I think this is his first sort of regular TV gig.
So this is, we're talking about Spider-Noir, which is a new and quite interesting addition to the Spideyverse, I suppose. But we're going to start with a show that stars Tina Fey, who has done a whole heap of TV. This is a show that's in its second season. It's on Netflix and it's called The Four Seasons. Why don't you run me through the synopsis of The Four Seasons?
Yeah, so this was originally an Alan Alda movie from the 1980s, and the first season pretty much took that story more or less faithfully into the modern day. It's about three middle-aged couples, Steve Carell and Kerry Kenny Silver played one, Tina Fey and Will Forte played another, and then you've got Colman Domingo and Marco Calvary who play a gay couple. So that they changed. And they meet up every 3 months, once a season, and they go on kind of holidays together, getaways together. And it is just this examination, exploration of, you know, friendship, marriage a lot, because in the first season, one of the relationships break up and they're kind of dealing with the fallout of what that means when Steve Carell's character hooks up, well, leaves his wife and hooks up with a much younger woman. And I mean, I don't think it's too much of a spoiler because, you know, that this will happen over a year ago. At the end of that, just as it did in the 1980s movie, Steve Carell's character is killed off. And so what they've got now is a different situation where they have a pregnant woman, the younger woman, who has now kind of joined their crew, and they're still sort of contending with that grief, but the change dynamics of this friendship group.
Yeah, so you've got the younger woman who was the new woman of this man who's now no longer around, who's dead, and his ex-wife, and it's part of the tension is whether they become friends or if their animosity towards each other sort of breaks up the group. So that's actually quite an interesting dimension to this story. Let's get a taste of this story, first of all, of this show, which is called, as we said, The Four Seasons. This is season two.
May we all come here together for the rest of our lives. No.
Let's just go. I want to
love you, man. I've been asking myself what this next chapter of our lives is going to be.
What would Nick say if he were here? I want
to love you now. Jack's having a hard time lately. At night, he barely talks to me.
Like when he's high?
Well, Jack doesn't get high.
I got nachos!
I never expected to be in charge of Nick's estate.
What if you keep it simple? Sell the boat?
I can't sell the boat, Jack, because I traded it for two donkeys.
What the fairy tale fuck?
Yeah, I mean, that excerpt from the trailer gives a pretty good idea of what it's about. I mean, it's a show that deals with some pretty weighty themes. There is, you know, as the second season begins, there's death, there's
birth.
A birth, and everything in between, gay adoption.
Moving countries,
yeah.
Aging parents. It's all the stuff that you expect to be dealing with in your 40s and 50s. And I think it does encapsulate a lot of those anxieties really well, and that eternal question of how do people drift apart as they get older, and that's both your romantic partner and also your friends. And I think, you know, in that sort of era of your life, these sorts of questions really come up. it's been out a few days, so I don't think it's a huge spoiler to say that Steve Carell does return for one episode in a flashback, an entire episode is a flashback. And and I actually was like, oh, I really miss his presence. And I didn't necessarily feel it until he was there again. And so it is, you know, it's one of those things where you're like, how does a show also move on when one of its core, well, I guess even marketing assets, one of its core stars doesn't return because of the way the story goes.
Absolutely. The other thing that struck me about this show, being new to it, unlike you, is that it seems to me like a real throwback to a sitcom era that's certainly, I mean, this is partly created by Tina Fey and collaborators she had on 30 Rock, right? So this is a throwback to pre-30 Rock sitcom humor to me, even pre-Seinfeld. There's something quite... And look, maybe this is by design. There's something quite gentle about it and a little stilted in the kind of setup, punchline, delivery of the humour, which I found hard to get into and didn't really enjoy. But then again, maybe that's the counterbalance.
It's a hangout show. It is a hangout show. Like, it has its stories and thematic propulsions, but it is very much a hangout show. So you do have to like the chemistry between these characters. Otherwise, like, you're just never going to get through the first two episodes.
But, you know, post Schitt's Creek and stuff, we've seen so many sort of hangout shows or sitcoms, I guess, that do have so much improvisation and do have a lot of spontaneity. This isn't that. And,
no,
and
it
was difficult for me to get into.
It does feel like it is very choreographed. I think it is definitely appealing to an older audience, but it is very easy to like if you like these actors as well, because they're bringing with them. So someone like Coleman Domingo is bringing with him that bombastic charisma. You know, he just dominates every kind of frame that he's in. So if you like these actors, then I think you end up enjoying the show. If you don't already have that established relationship with even the actors, let alone the characters, it can, I think, be a bit of a struggle. I really enjoyed it. I mean, I'm even watching 30 Rock again this week.
Right.
Not because of the four seasons, but because there was just this wild story out of the US about a dog that shot a woman with a shotgun. And that was like a weird plot point in 30 Rock.
Right.
Only in America. And so for me, I think with Tina Fey, even when she's a little bit rocky, I will always be there to hang out with her.
Yeah. I mean, it does strike me as a show that is really locked in on its audience and it mirrors their anxieties, mirrors their lives, almost to the exclusion of everything else. I don't think anyone outside the age bracket is really meant to get into this.
No,
probably not. No.
I mean, I like to think I'm a little young for this group, but it does feel like at least my cohort is gearing up towards this era, and it starts to feel like, oh, this is maybe more relevant than I want it to be.
It's a primer for what's coming. Okay, the show is the four seasons. Season two, there are,
eight episodes.
Yeah, eight episodes. There are two seasons. You can see both of them streaming over at Netflix. A very different show now. If you Google this show, right, it starts to rain on your page.
Yes.
It's a noir style, rain-slicked streets and dark alleyways. It is a show that has had also a lot of real world billboard advertising. It's called Spider Noir. Stars Nick Cage as he's a jaded 1930s private detective, but he has these spidey powers and he has sworn off using them until, I guess, he finds himself caught up in a battle of wits with, some of the city's worst criminals and characters.
Every mystery forms a complex web. But pull the right strand, and it's a straight line to the answer.
I'm glowing bright of Ophidian.
The universe trends to disorder.
Amphibian monsters on the loose.
On elemental chemical.
All you can do is fight to keep the chaos from your door.
I came here to offer you a job. My friend disappeared.
You haven't given us much to go.
What can I say? The world's a dangerous place. But I think you're braver than you let on.
Okay, so you can, first things first, you can choose to watch this in colour or black and white.
I did it alternatingly. So I watched black and white one episode, colour the next episode, and then so on.
You can alternate within the episode too. You can just go at a click. You just switches.
Oh, can you? Okay,
yeah, I was doing that.
Yeah. Nick Cage and the production crew have expressed a desire for you to watch it in black and white to kind of give it more of that, I guess, the era that they're, you know, inspired by. But I think it looks great in both, actually. I liked the black and white because you can see, obviously, all the shadows and it mirrors, you know, the grey morality of everybody. But even in colour, it's very vibrant. It's very dynamic and it doesn't suffer that problem that so many modern streaming shows have that we've been talking about, you know, for the past couple of years about this very dull colour grading.
The grey.
And also because it fits in that comic book, genre of like things being hyper-realistic and being really just over the top. So at the end of it, I was like, I honestly don't know which one I preferred.
No, I agree with you. I switch between the two, as I said, and the color is not sort of accidental or casual or not thought through. The color version is actually really great. And there are some beautiful textures
and gowns. And
absolutely.
Yeah, costuming, production
because
design.
It's quite a lush series. Yes. They've spent a lot of money on this. What did you make of Nick Cage in this role?
I really like him in this role, especially when he's like very twitchy and stuff. And it's interesting for him because I think we see him as such a oftentimes over the top performer while also being able to be very restrained in roles like Pig. And I think in this character, he's performing within the character as well. Like the character's putting on these different faces for different audiences. So you get to see these different versions or degrees of Nick Cage-iness, if you will.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's a very psychological performance, though, isn't it? It's a role that demands a lot of an actor's ability to express a psychological interiority, and he's talked about being influenced by, you know, classic film noir, like the big film noirs, like The Big Sleep and In a Lonely Place and Bogart.
Yeah, and
especially.
He's pulling on Bogart, he's pulling on James Cagney. The show itself is definitely referencing all of those things, like Laura and the Maltese Falcon, obviously. He could be a Raymond Chandler character. Essentially, the premise is take a Raymond Chandler character and put him in Spider-Man universe and give him the ability to swing around and shoot webs from his wrists.
Yeah, from his wrists. It's beautifully made. It's quite pacey. There's nothing not to like in a way. I mean, it is a little surface as comic
it
book
is,
sort of,
and it's a little derivative, and it is a
well,
little
it's very derivative.
It's very derivative. It's very predictable as well. Like the story, you know, there's a crime lord played by Brendan Gleeson, full Irish brogue. There's a couple of other superpowered beings, and there's a femme fatale played by Lee Jong Lee, who was in Babylon, and so there, and also in Sinners, and so. You know, it's got all those elements and the way the story goes towards the end, nothing really goes, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
But I think the comfort of the show is the fact that it is hitting those genre tropes so well.
And it's so rich atmospherically, right? To watch it, you can just immerse yourself in this universe and binge it over an autumn or now winter rainy weekend.
Yes.
It has that feel to it. And I think you're right. There aren't necessarily any great surprises, but it's all done so well. Brendan Gleeson's excellent in it as, I mean, he is a little bit hammy, but he's very good as a villain here as well.
Yeah, and he's, you know, like an Edward G. Robinson kind of type. And I should say that Lamorne Morris is in it as well. He plays a journalist and very much a 1930s journalist who's, you know, on the floor getting assaulted and taking photos of police brutality. It's quite interesting.
How do you judge this as an addition to the Spider-Verse, right? Because this is famously an IP that is shared by Marvel and Sony, and this is coming from Sony, right?
This is coming from Sony. It's kind of a spin-off, not spin-off from Into the Spider-Verse, the animated series, because Nick Cage did a voice cameo even as Spider-Man Noir in the first movie. I think it's separated from the rest of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. You take it as its own thing and you don't worry about how it fits into the rest of it.
Yeah. But it's good, right? I think it's
good. I
really
like it.
Yeah. All right. Spider-Noir, 8 1-hour, more or less, episodes streaming over at Prime Video. And that is where we leave it for this 15-minute edition, inaugural 15-minute edition of The Couch. It's been great, Wenli Ma. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thank you, dear listener, for joining us. I hope we'll have your company next time. I'm Jason DeRosso.
I'm Wenli Ma.
Bye.
Bye.